short, happy growling sounds. Mike had to dodge the lethal tail before he could close and lock the door behind him.
"Let's go, boy,"
Mike said, grinning when Charlie jumped down the front steps and ran around the truck once before stopping at the driver's door. Mike opened the door and waited for Charlie to scramble in before he slid in after the dog. Inserting the key into the ignition, he pressed the button to roll down the passenger window halfway. Charlie dropped his squeaky ball on the seat and stuck his head out the window.
"Watch the tail, boy,"
Mike grumbled, pushing on Charlie's hindquarters to make him sit.
"That's much better."
Backing out of the driveway, Mike switched his thoughts back to the information he had been reading over again before they left. He ran through what he knew about the two missing women again. They had been best friends since kindergarten and became roommates after graduating from high school. Carly worked at the local bank while Jenny was a teacher at the elementary school. The biggest coincidence between the two was when and where they disappeared, 2 years apart to the day. Mike couldn't help but wonder if someone had been stalking the two women. He'd investigated to see if there were any drifters or residents who might have fit the pattern or appeared suspicious, but he'd come up with a blank. Hell, even Ross came up clean, which had surprised Mike. Turning into the long entrance to Yahats State Park, Mike slowed down at the gate. He shifted the truck into park and pulled his wallet out of his front pocket.
"Hey, Mike, how are you doing today?"
the ranger said after opening the window.
"Good. How about you, Marty?"
Mike replied.
"Not bad. You here on personal or business?"
Marty asked, looking at Mike's annual state park pass.
"Both,"
Mike replied, taking his card back when Marty held it out to him.
"If you need anything, just call," Marty said.
Mike nodded, then paused.
"You've been here a while, haven't you, Marty?"
he asked, gazing back at the other man.
"About 6 or 7 years now,"
Marty replied, leaning on the windowsill.
"Have you ever seen or heard anything unusual?"
Mike asked.
Marty shrugged. "There's always something unusual when you're in the woods. Can you be more specific?"
he asked, with a confused frown.
"I don't know. Strange. Unexplainable,"
Mike said.
"Like Bigfoot strange?"
Marty asked.
Mike shook his head. "What is it with people and Bigfoot?"
he scoffed with a deep sigh.
"Okay, yes, like Bigfoot."
Marty looked thoughtful for a moment before he shook his head.
"Nah, I've seen strange dancing lights. I figured it might be some type of methane gas balls. I've seen those before, down in the swamps, when I worked at the state park in Louisiana. I've heard some strange noises, felt a minor quake or two, and the lights, but nothing like Bigfoot. I'd love to get a picture of him."
Mike realized that this conversation was going south along with the floating gas balls when Marty started relating all the weird stuff he'd seen. Fortunately, Charlie decided they had stopped long enough and began to whine. Mike ran his hand down the dog's head when Charlie turned and gave him a lick.
"Thanks, Marty. I'll see you later,"
Mike said, cutting the other man off.
"See you, Mike."
"Bye, Charlie,"
Marty said with a wave. Charlie barked in Mike's ear. Mike shifted the truck into gear and eased off the brake. Pulling forward, he accelerated once they had cleared the speed bump. Charlie, happy that they were moving again, resumed his position as co-pilot. Mike chuckled at the pure enjoyment Charlie was getting from hanging his head out the window, his ears flapping in the breeze, and his nose going a million miles an hour.
"Let me know if you smell Bigfoot, okay, boy?" Mike instructed.
10 minutes later, Mike was parked in the parking lot where Carly and Jenny's cars had been recovered. Through the windshield of his truck, he gazed at the forest ahead of him. The clouds were rolling in from the ocean, making it another dreary, overcast day, which was typical of the weather for the area. The parking lot was empty, leaving Mike to summarize that other would-be visitors had looked at the weather forecast before deciding to venture out. Turning off the engine, he sat in his car for several minutes, looking out at the thick line of trees in front of him.
"Sometimes I think I need my head examined," he muttered under his breath,
even as he reached for the dark brown jacket lying underneath Charlie on the seat next to him. Mike grinned when a cold nose pushed against his hand.
I know. Nature calls and there are only a million trees to mark, he said, lifting his hand to scratch Charlie, who decided to lay down at the same time he tried to pick up his jacket.
I promised you a run today, no matter what, so no pooping out on me now that we're here. Let's go.
Mike pushed open the door and slid out of the truck. Charlie immediately stood up, his dark golden body quivering with excitement. Mike stood in front of the door, blocking the opening while he pulled on his jacket. Reaching between Charlie and the back of the seat, Mike grabbed the retractable leash. He grimaced when Charlie ran his tongue over his cheek.
Thanks, dude,
Mike muttered as he clipped the leash to Charlie's collar. He rubbed his cheek against the soft fabric lining the collar of his jacket.
Let's go, boy. I'll let you off once we get to the beach.
He stepped back so that Charlie could jump down and then closed the door. Pressing the lock, he turned and headed down the trail, with Charlie trotting enthusiastically by his side. He used his free hand to pull up the collar of his jacket when it began to heavily mist, and a gust of wind sent a trickle of cold water down his neck. Mike shook his head when Charlie just looked up with his tongue hanging out and wagged his tail.
Don't look at me, Mike softly chuckled. You can thank Mother Nature. She must know how much you love the water.
Mike tucked his left hand into the pocket of his leather jacket and focused on the path in front of him. Walking along the trail, his mind wandered as they stopped by every other tree so Charlie could sniff or leave his mark. After the fifth tree, Mike decided they'd never make it to the beach at the rate they were going. Mike sighed as they navigated the uneven trail. His thoughts flashed back to his conversation with Ruth a few months before. He had encouraged Ruth to never give up on finding someone. He knew his sister was gun-shy after her marriage ended. Mike hadn't known much about Howard, but from the little he did know, he had to admit he was surprised that Ruth had seen anything in the guy. Ruth had a powerful personality. She was blunt, like their dad, and opinionated, like their mother. When you put both of those traits together and mixed in a high IQ and a smart-ass sense of humor, it made it difficult to find someone who could keep up with her without feeling intimidated. Of course, she had pointed out that at least she did try to find someone. That had shut him up. Now it was just Ruth and him, and Charlie. His gaze flickered to the dog. Charlie had stopped to smell the base of yet another huge Douglas fir that grew along the path.
Okay, six times, that's the limit, Mike told the pup with a shake of his head. Where in the hell you store that much pee is beyond me.
Charlie looked up at him with a happy grin after making sure the tree was properly watered.
I don't know why I thought I could discover anything with you along except maybe how many gallons of pee a dog can hold in his bladder.
Woof! Charlie responded, before pulling on the leash.
Okay, Mike chuckled. We'll head down to the beach. Maybe chasing a few sticks will make you feel better. I swear, it's official. I've gone nuts. Now I'm talking to the dog, and he answers me. What's next, a woodland witch or a mermaid to tempt my heart?
A shiver ran down his spine when Charlie whined. Shrugging his shoulders, Mike pushed his unease away as a sudden burst of energy flooded his body. A grin curved his lips as he reached down and unhooked the leash.
I'll race you, he said, pocketing the leash and taking off down the crooked, uneven trail at an easy run. First one on the beach has to clean the dishes tonight.
A husky laugh escaped him when Charlie darted ahead of him. Inhaling deeply, Mike breathed in the cold, damp air. It filled his lungs, energizing him. For the first time in over a year, he felt like his life was beginning to make sense again.
I just hope it is more than cleaning the dishes after Charlie licks them, he thought, as they broke through the opening in the trees and onto the rocky shore.
10 minutes and half a mile later, Mike slowed to a walk. Charlie ran circles around him, a large piece of driftwood in his mouth. Mike chuckled at the dog's antics. It felt good to be out and to run, even if it was only a short distance. Breathing deeply, Mike enjoyed the mixture of cold air and salt. Typical of the weather along the coast, the sun was now shining. The saying, "Just wait 5 minutes and the weather will change," was never more true than along the coast of the Pacific Northwest. Mike bent over and grabbed the stick from Charlie's jaws. The pup immediately let it go and danced back several steps in anticipation. Pulling his arm back, he threw the piece of wood. Charlie took off after it like a bullet. A second later, the laugh on Mike's lips turned to a muttered oath. Charlie's startled yelp and quick retreat to cower behind Mike proved to him that he wasn't hallucinating.
"What the hell?" Mike said under his breath.
In front of him, where the beach used to be, had changed to a swirling whirlpool of color. Shock changed to a frown of concentration when the center of the whirlpool began to turn clear. Charlie's deep growl of warning came less than a second after the hair on the back of Mike's neck literally stood up from the electrical charge in the air. Mike's internal warning bells started clamoring, and he couldn't help but briefly acknowledge that Tanaka's alien theory might have some merit to it after all. At the thought, he instinctively reached for the pistol in his hip holster. He flicked the snap open and quickly drew the pistol, holding it steady in both hands as he took a step closer to the anomaly. His eyes widened when he saw a woman twisting and falling to the ground. Her arm rose in a defensive move. It took less than a second to understand why, when a massive black creature with three legs leaped to attack her. The familiar recoil of his gun firing reverberated through him. He'd aimed for the center of the creature's forehead before lowering the gun to aim at its broad chest. With each shot, he took a determined step closer in an effort to reach the woman and get her to safety. The black body crashed to the rock and sand-strewn beach with enough force that Mike could feel the ground shake from the impact. The body skidded several feet before it came to a halt near the woman. The woman's head lifted, and she stared in shock at the dead creature. Mike released a smothered curse when Charlie darted past him toward the woman.
"Charlie, heel! Damn it, dog, will you come here?" he ordered in a sharp voice.
He stepped closer and briefly looked down at the woman before his gaze moved to scan the area in case there were any more of the things waiting to attack. Once he was fairly confident there were no more, he turned his gaze back to the thing he'd just shot. Hell, it didn't even look like it was from Earth. Shaken, he looked at the mahogany-haired woman gazing up at him in shock. He didn't know much about wildlife, but one thing he did know. The thing he'd just killed looked like something out of a science fiction or horror movie.
And so did the woman, he thought.
Chapter 4. An hour earlier, on the Isle of Magic. Drawing in a deep breath, Marina watched as one of the Sea Witch's guards dismounted. He squatted down, touching the ground before he glanced up and snarled. His sharp teeth snapped together in a savage string of twisted words that were difficult to understand. But the message was clear. She and her brother and sister had been found. Marina rose up and pulled back on the bowstring. An arrow, blazing with magical energy, appeared. She released the arrow just as the ogre rose to his feet. The arrow pierced his chest, disappearing completely inside him. Not waiting for his body to fall, she released a second arrow toward the other guard, and a third, fourth, and fifth one into the hellhound standing next to the first guard. The bodies glowed for a moment as the powerful magic embedded in the arrows discharged. The fiery burst of energy created cracks of jagged red lines along their skin before their bodies turned to ash. All evidence of their presence was gone as the late afternoon breeze caught the dissolving flakes and carried them away. Marina held her ground as the remaining hellhounds swiveled around, watching the floating ash. She released her arrows as quickly as she could pull back on the bowstring. Fear gripped her. It took another three arrows to kill the second hellhound before she could turn her attention to the third one. By then, it had narrowed in on her position. Adrenaline poured through her when she saw it leap up onto the rocks below her. She shot an arrow into the beast's right shoulder, then turned and quickly scrambled over the large boulders to lead it away from her brother and sister's hiding place. Jumping down, Marina bent her knees as she landed on the uneven rock below her and quickly slid down, falling the last 6 feet to the ground. Her feet dug into the ground and she fell forward into a roll before coming back up on her feet. She glanced over her shoulder when she heard the hellhound's vicious snarl, watching as it twisted around in an attempt to follow her. Its right front leg had dissolved below the shoulder where she had shot it. It rolled off the boulder, hitting the ground with a hard thump. A renewed wave of adrenaline flooded her as she took off through the woods and down the path. The uneven ground divided, one section leading back to her village, the other to the turbulent seas that surrounded the Isle of Magic. Unwilling to endanger the villagers any more than she already had, Marina turned toward the darker path. Her heart pounded as she jumped over a fallen log. She turned as she landed, stumbling backwards, and fired another enchanted arrow. The hellhound swerved, crashing into a huge tree as it avoided the blazing shaft. Marina turned on her heel as it lost its balance again. Even with three legs, the beast could run faster than she could once they were on open ground. She must make it to the beach where she could get a clear shot. A low branch in front of her lifted just enough to keep her from crawling to get under it. The beast was mere seconds behind her. She could hear the sound of wood splintering and the trees moan as the hellhound snapped the branch as if it were a twig.
"Please let my aim be true, Mr. Bow," she whispered as she ran.
Shielding her face with her arm, she pushed through the last veil of tangled vines covering the entrance to the rocky beach. Running across the sand and rock, she made it almost 20 yards when the loose rocks under her feet shifted, throwing her off balance when she tried to look behind her. A sharp cry escaped her when her ankle twisted on the loose rocks and she fell hard. Her gaze flew to where her bow landed several feet from where she lay sprawled on the uneven ground. She pushed up onto her elbow, biting her lip when pain radiated from her ankle. The hellhound's loud snarl as it burst through the opening onto the beach sent a shaft of fear through her, and she twisted until she was facing it. She watched as it slowly scanned the beach and locked onto her location. Raising her hand, she whispered a spell, calling for her bow to come to her. Her eyes widened and she flinched when the beast released a loud roar as it tensed for an attack. She frantically searched for her bow when she did not feel it in her hand. Dread filled her when she realized the spell she had woven had opened a portal behind her. In her haste, she had uttered the wrong words. This mistake would be the death of her. She cried in denial when the beast leaped toward her. Falling backwards, she watched, as if in slow motion, as the hellhound's body left the ground. Turning her head away, she tensed in preparation for the impact. She didn't see the hellhound as it jerked and tumbled to the side, but she heard several loud explosions fill the air. Slowly opening her eyes, she stared in shock at the dead creature. Her breath hiccuped as she lay twisted to the side. Mere inches from where she lay, the hellhound's blank eyes stared at her. She jerked and shrieked when a cold, moist thing pressed against the heated skin of her neck. Turning her head, she was rewarded with a warm tongue across her cheek.
"Charlie, heel!" a deep voice commanded from behind her. "Damn it, dog, will you come here?"
Marina turned, her eyes wide with disbelief, as the face of a strange man suddenly came into view. His hands were raised as he cautiously stepped toward her. At first, she thought he was staring at her, but she quickly realized his eyes were on the hellhound lying next to her. She squeaked when the golden-haired beast suddenly blocked her vision. It whined and laid down next to her, resting its head on her chest.
"Oh, I... good beast," she stammered when it raised its head and suddenly licked her chin.
Marina nervously turned her attention back to the man. He looked down at her before his eyes flickered to the hellhound again. He turned in a slow circle, studying the long beach with a confused frown on his face. He was silent for several long seconds, as if he were processing what just happened. Marina didn't care. His confusion gave her a chance to catch her breath and study the man who saved her life. She ran her gaze over his rugged face. His eyes were a clear blue, just like the sky on a cloudless day, and were framed by black lashes. His face was lean and tanned. He was wearing a black sweater that covered the firm column of his throat. The dark brown leather jacket was open in front, and his strong hands were wrapped around a dark metal weapon of some type. She swallowed as she moved her gaze down to his flat stomach and lean hips encased in dark blue material.
"What in the hell was that thing?"
he demanded, before he frowned at the golden-haired beast licking her hand. "Charlie, get over here!" Marina's lips twitched in unexpected amusement when the creature, named Charlie, lifted his head and wagged his tail but didn't move from her side. Gingerly sitting up, Marina raised a hand to push back the strands of her dark mahogany hair. It had come loose from the braid during her run. She grimaced when a long, wet tongue brushed her chin, but she didn't push the beast away from her. Instead, her fingers instinctively threaded through the long hair.
"It is a hellhound, one of the sea witch's creations,"
Marina responded, motioning toward the hellhound.
"Listen, are you okay? I saw you fall, then that thing jumped and..."
he asked in a deep voice, his gaze moving from her face to the hellhound and back again.
"Yes. Thank you for saving my life," Marina replied, stroking the golden-haired beast. "Where did you come from? And what magic did you use to kill it? The other ones took three of my arrows with one of my most powerful spells to do such a task."
"I... arrows? Spells?"
The man paused and shook his head in confusion.
"Where the hell am I?"
Marina tilted her head to the side as she gazed up at him with a sudden feeling of dread. Something told her that the spell she cast did more than open a portal. It allowed something, or in this case, someone, through, who did not belong in her world. She had never opened a portal before. In fact, the only people she knew who might be powerful enough to open one were the queen and king. She didn't understand how she could have opened a cross-dimensional portal. She quickly dismissed that idea. While there was no denying that a spell more powerful than any she had ever created before had occurred, it didn't mean that this man came from another world. He was probably from one of the other kingdoms. Whatever was the cause, Marina was thankful for his help. There was no denying that he had saved her life. A brief thought flashed through her mind that perhaps this man was the one her mother told them about. Marina looked up at the man again and dismissed that idea as well. She could not see any magic surrounding him. Even the weapon in his hand did not show a magical aura. Bowing her head, she focused on the pain in her ankle. Her right ankle throbbed. It wasn't broken, but it was definitely very badly sprained. She leaned forward, spreading her hands above her ankle. Softly uttering a simple spell, she felt warmth begin to spread through the damaged tissue. Her healing magic was not as strong as that of her mother and sister, but it would have to do if she wanted to return to where she had left her brother and sister before darkness fell. She would have to be careful. Her ankle would still be weak and tender. She couldn't afford to twist it again or run into any more of Magna's guards. She sighed in relief as the pain began to fade.
"You're on the Isle of Magic," Marina stated,
testing her ankle before she slowly pushed Charlie back so she could rise to her feet.
"Which isle are you from?"
Marina knew immediately from the blank expression on the man's face that something was very wrong. Her gaze ran over him once more before moving to the beast staring up at her with warm brown eyes. The sense of uncertainty returned with a vengeance. She looked back at the man and bit her lip.
"You're not from any of the isles, are you?"
she asked in a soft, hesitant voice, as she studied the mix of emotions running across his face. The man shook his head in a slow, measured movement. He returned her intent stare before looking around at the beach. His eyes paused on the hellhound. She saw him swallow and lower the weapon in his hands. He carefully slipped it back into a black holster at his waist before he snapped his fingers. Charlie immediately went to his side and whined. She felt his gaze run over her again and knew he hadn't missed a thing when he looked back into her dark purple eyes.
"I think you need to start talking. Now," he stated in a hard voice. "I want to know where in the hell I am, who you are, and what the hell that thing is."
Marina sighed and glanced at the darkening sky. With a muttered curse, she knew she didn't have much time or much of a choice. He would have to go with her. Turning, she walked over to her bow and picked it up.
"I'm sorry, Marina," the bow said. "It isn't your fault, Mr. Bow. I should have held on to you better," she replied. "Let's take care of the hellhound while we still can."
Turning, she pulled back on the bowstring. The string glowed with her magic, and she shot 3 arrows into the dead creature. In silence, she watched as the hellhound glowed before turning to ash. Only when she was satisfied there was no evidence of the creature or her presence did she turn back to the pale-faced man watching her.
"My name is Marina Fay," she said. "I am the daughter of Aranus and Cornelia from the village of Rains. We need to leave. It will be dark soon, and we are not safe here."
She turned on her heel and started walking back toward the forest. She glanced over her shoulder and paused when she saw that the man was still standing in the same place. She gripped the bow in her left hand and impatiently pushed her hair back when a long strand blew across her face.
"What the fuck are you?" the man asked in a hoarse voice.
"I am a witch, of course," Marina replied with a raised eyebrow. "Haven't you ever met one before?"
Chapter 5 Mike stared at the woman in shock before he slowly shook his head.
"No, not a real one, anyway," he tersely replied.
She tilted her head and frowned at him.
"What other kind of witch is there?" she asked.
"Marina, that's what you said your name is, right? Would you please tell me what in the hell is going on?" Mike demanded.
"I will, but not here," she replied, taking a step toward him. "It is dangerous to be out in the open like this. One of the sea witch's creatures might still be around."
She looked up at the sky again before looking back at him.
"It will also be dark soon. We need to find a safe place for the night before the sun sets."
"The sun sets? It was morning just a few minutes ago back where I'm from," Mike replied, waving his hand behind him.
He looked back down the empty beach again. He was trying to ignore the fact that the ocean was now almost the same color as the woman's eyes. It should have been blue, green, or almost black, but not purple. Who ever heard of a purple ocean? He swung his head back toward her when he felt the touch of her hand on his arm. Marina gazed up at him with an intense look. Her face was tight with determination.
"What is your name?" she asked.
"What? Oh, yeah, sorry. My name is Mike Holbrook," Mike replied. "Are your eyes really that color?"
A startled chuckle escaped her. She blinked and nodded her head. Mike caught the amused smile on her lips before it faded. She stared up at him with wide, serious eyes.
"Mike Holbrook, I promise to tell you everything I know once we are safe. Please, trust me for now," she said in a quiet voice.
Mike hesitated. He couldn't help but look back at the spot where that thing had been just minutes earlier. It had been unlike anything he'd ever seen before. He gave a brief nod.
"I'll follow you for now, but I expect you to explain everything the second we stop wherever you think is a safe place," he bit out.
"Agreed," she said.
Mike watched her walk away. His gaze ran over her slender, almost boyish figure. Not boyish, waif-like, he thought, as he began to follow her across the rocky beach to the tree line.
"Traitor,"
Mike muttered under his breath when Charlie trotted ahead of him to walk beside the woman. Mike glanced around, noting and storing details, even as his mind replayed what happened. A quick look over his shoulder back the way they had come showed massive cliffs rising out of the water, almost twice the height of those back home. Their sheer size reminded him of the cliffs he had seen at Big Bend National Park along the Rio Grande in Texas. He paused at the entrance to the forest and stared up at the sky. The distinctive shape of two moons could be seen, one closer to the planet than the other, but definitely two moons.
"Mike, come! It will be dark in less than an hour," Marina called in a quiet voice.
"I'm coming," he said,
turning back around and pushing the loose vines out of his way.
"I don't know where I'm going, but I'm coming."
The scene from the beach earlier played like a broken record in Mike's head as he followed Marina and Charlie. Each step seemed to increase the number of questions he had and emphasize the strangeness of the situation. He gritted his teeth in frustration. More than once, Marina stopped and held up her hand. He could tell she was listening to the sounds around them before she started forward again. Farther down the trail, they came to a spot where a limb the size of his thigh lay twisted and broken. Marina ran her hand over the broken area. Mike knew his mouth had dropped open when the ravaged pieces twisted and formed a knot.
"What did you do?" he asked, curious.
Marina shrugged and continued moving down the path.
"My strongest gift of magic is with the trees and plants. Mr. Tree helped slow down the hellhound as best he could. In doing so, he was damaged. Such damage, if not taken care of, can open a tree to predators that feed on the open wounds. Most of the time, nature must take its course, and the tree will survive and heal. Damage done by Magna's evil will fester, and the trees will die unless they are healed. I do what I can to protect them," Marina stated. "There is a tree not far from here where we can find shelter for the night. Darkness comes quickly, and we must hurry."
Mike silently nodded in acknowledgement. Following her in silence, he couldn't help but notice that she moved with grace. He blinked several times, wondering if his eyes were playing tricks on him, because she stepped so lightly it almost looked as if she were floating above the ground. Her hair was a dark mahogany, while her eyes were a dark purple. Something told him both were natural, especially after her reaction earlier when he asked about her eyes. She was dressed in a long black sweater that stopped mid-thigh. She wore black leggings and black boots that reached her knees. He swallowed and watched Charlie duck under a log. It was obvious the pup had taken a liking to the woman.
"Marina," he silently corrected himself. "Daughter of Erinus and Cornelia from the Village of Rains. Don't forget she's a witch, of course, dumbass."
He was still trying to get it through his head that she had shot magic arrows into a creature straight out of a horror film. The arrows had glowed before disappearing inside the beast. Then the whole thing had turned to ash. He wasn't even going to think about the fact that the bow could talk, or the way she made the tree do that weird knot thing.
"Hell, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that nightmare on the beach," he thought in exasperation.
Marina paused on the trail. He could see her indecision. Charlie whined and nudged her hand.
"What is it?" Mike asked.
She bit her lip. She gazed farther down the trail before turning to look at him. The flicker of uncertainty told him that there was something else going on.
"I left my brother and sister in the rocks not far from here. I told Jeff I would be back once I drew the hellhounds away," she admitted.
"So what is the problem? We go get them and get to the safe spot before dark," he replied.
She smiled, and an expression of relief flickered through her unusual eyes. She nodded and continued down the path. Several minutes later, they emerged out of the forest to an area covered in large boulders. Mike noticed that Marina carefully searched the area before she stepped out into the open. He looked up into the rocks in the direction that Marina was staring. He blinked when a lean boy appeared a moment later, followed by a slender young girl. From their coloring and build, he could see the resemblance to Marina. Marina raised her hand and waved.
"Come down! We must make camp before dark," she said.
Mike watched the two younger children carefully climb down. The boy turned several times to help the girl. Mike instinctively stepped forward and reached up to help the girl down from the last boulder. He didn't miss the look of fear that flashed through her eyes as they darted from him to Marina. He patiently waited for her to realize he meant no harm. Charlie helped by jumping up and putting his paws on the rock to reach eagerly for her hand with his long, wet tongue. The girl softly giggled when she felt Charlie's enthusiastic greeting.
"Come, Aaron," Marina whispered reassuringly. "We must hurry."
Mike gently lowered the girl to the ground and turned in time to see Marina pause when the boy reached out to grip her arm. The boy's eyes were focused on Mike's face, and he could feel the barely contained animosity.
"Who is he?" Jeff demanded.
Mike didn't miss the slight movement of the boy's hand.
Jeff's fingers were wrapped around the handle of a long knife sheathed at his waist.
The look in his eyes must have warned the boy not to pull it out, because his hand wavered for a moment before falling to his side.
"I don't know, but he saved my life,"
Marina admitted in a quiet, hesitant voice. The boy's eyes widened before his gaze moved back to Mike.
"Which village are you from? You look different from us," Jeff said, as a light of curiosity came into his eyes.
"No shit," Mike muttered, before he flushed when Marina's lips twitched again. "I'm not from around here. Wherever in the hell here is. Your name is Jeff, right?"
"Yes, I am Jeff, son of Arinus and Cornelia," Jeff stated. "What are you called?"
"Mike Holbrook. Detective Mike Holbrook, and this furball is Charlie. I work for the Lincoln County Sheriff's Department and the Yahats Police Department in Oregon. Listen, before I go any further, I want to know what is going on. What was that thing back on the beach? Why are you hiding? And where are we going? I think before I go any further, I deserve some answers," he said, folding his arms across his chest. He saw Marina's chin lift, and she gave him an impatient look before glancing up at the sky again. He could see the indecision on her face before she released the breath she was holding. There was a sense of apprehension in the stiffness of her shoulders as she gazed back at him.
"We do not have much time," she said, stepping closer to him until she was standing in front of him. "I am not sure what happened back on the beach. I cast a spell, and you appeared. You know this is my brother, Jeff, and this is my sister, Aaron. I have told you who I am. The thing back on the beach was a creature summoned through black magic by the Sea Witch. She and her minions are who we hide from. We must seek safety before darkness descends."
"Why? Why before dark?" Mike asked, in a soft tone. Marina's expression grew sad before she turned her face away from him.
"Because the Sea Witch created a spell that drains our powers if we try to use them after dark. Without our magic, we would be defenseless against the creatures she created. Now, will you come with us or not? We cannot delay any longer," she explained quietly, before looking up at him again.
Mike's lips tightened at the look of determination in Marina's eyes. He sensed that she was telling him the truth. Giving her a curt nod, he decided it was best to follow along, at least until he could figure out how to get back home. The last thing he wanted to do was meet up with more of those hellhounds in the middle of the night. It was obvious he was no longer in Oregon. The question was, where was he? He gazed around at the growing darkness. Night, when it should be mid-morning, the dead creature on the beach, Marina's talking magic bow, twin moons, and now a spell that drained magic. The list was growing.
"Hell, with the way things are going, all I need to do is find a yellow brick road, change Charlie's name to Toto, and find a tornado to make this nightmare complete," he thought, as he and Charlie followed behind the young girl called Aaron.
Chapter 6 Mike kept a keen eye on where they were going. They were heading in a different direction, away from the boulders and the beach. If the sun rose and set in the same directions as it did back home, then they were heading east. He glanced at Marina. She was leading them along a winding, steep trail that ran parallel to a river. Nearly half a mile down the path, the river narrowed. He shook his head in wonder when she climbed the boulders up to a massive, dead tree that created a bridge across the turbulent waters and the small waterfall created by the constriction of boulders and dead branches that had washed down the river. Jeff turned and lifted Aaron onto the tree, while Marina held out her bow to steady her sister and help pull her up. Charlie whined, not wanting to be away from the little girl who he had taken a shine to. It took a couple of tries, but with a little help from Jeff, the dog was able to scramble up onto the tree. It was obvious from the silent teamwork that the three of them had worked together many times before in similar situations. Mike frowned when a strange and unexpected emotion swept through him as he studied Marina's expressive face. It felt like someone had reached inside him and tugged on his heart. He didn't know if it was because he was confused by everything that had happened, or if it was a phenomenon caused by being in this alternate reality. Whatever was causing the emotion, it was frustrating the hell out of him. Of course, he'd always been a sucker for a damsel in distress, even though this damsel could probably turn him into a toad if he wasn't careful. Shaking his head, he climbed up after Jeff and navigated his way through the dried and broken limbs. Jeff swung around in front of Aaron, calling for Charlie to follow him. Mike understood why when they reached the other side and had to work their way through the tangle of dried roots to the rocky shore of the river. Jeff helped Charlie down first, before he turned back to help his younger sister. Once they were down, Jeff made a beeline for the forest. Mike looked up at the massive trees the size of the redwoods back home.
"Hurry," Marina softly called.
"Marina, I..."
Aaron started to say. Mike reached out and steadied Aaron when she slipped on the smooth river stones and almost fell. He motioned for Charlie to back up when the dog whined and pushed his nose against Aaron's hand. Mike could feel heat radiating from Aaron through the material covering her arms.
"Steady there. Marina, Aaron feels like she has a fever," he said.
"Yes, I know. That is why we went to the village. She needs help. I had hoped the healer would help her more than she did, but it was too dangerous. We were lucky she helped us at all," Marina replied with a tired nod.
"Can't you make her better?"
Mike asked, wrapping a supporting arm around Aaron's waist before lifting her into his arms when her legs gave out.
"I saw you do something to your leg back on the beach."
Marina shook her head and touched Aaron's cheek with the tips of her fingers.
"No, I can heal myself of minor wounds, but it does not work on others. I do not have the power to focus on their pain. With myself, I know what hurts and can focus enough to send a touch of healing to it. Aaron has the gift to heal, but so many of the children have been ill lately that she is weak. No, the sickness has found its way inside her," she murmured.
"Why didn't the healer help her more?" Mike asked with a frown.
"Because the sea witch would find out,"
Jeff answered bitterly, scratching Charlie's head when the dog circled around him.
"We barely escaped as it was. The sea witch would have destroyed the village, just as she destroyed ours."
"Sea witch? You've mentioned her earlier. Who is she? And what do you mean by destroy the village?"
Mike asked, with a raised eyebrow.
"Are you talking about a sea witch who lives at the bottom of the sea, like in the story of the Little Mermaid?"
Aaron giggled.
"The mermaids do not like her," she whispered,
resting her head against Mike's shoulder and closing her eyes.
"The Sea King sent her to the bottom of the ocean. I wish she would have stayed there. He should have killed her when he had the chance. Isha said she tried to harm one of the Sea King's sons a year ago. Instead, he let her go again. And now she is here. We are almost to the tree where we will spend the night. Aaron needs to rest, and she needs a chance to let the healing stones help her,"
Marina said, before turning back and striding toward the woods.
"So why did this sea witch come here? Can she live out of the water? I mean, isn't she like this octopus-type creature or something?"
Mike said, shifting Aaron in his arms. Jeff snorted behind him.
"Maybe the sea witch from your kingdom is," he said in a gruff tone. "She is the cousin of the Sea King. She can breathe on land or under the sea, just like all the sea people can."
"She came to force our people to help her overthrow the Sea King. Papa said that she wanted to rule all of the kingdoms. I don't know why. It seems like it would be most difficult,"
Aaron whispered. Her eyes fluttered open,
and she stared at Marina. Tell him, Marina. Jeff is right. He might be the one Aisha told us about.
Who is this Aisha, and tell me what? Mike asked in frustration as they stepped between two large trees.
Aisha is our older brother, Marina explained.
He was the king and queen's captain of the guard, Jeff added, climbing over a tree trunk.
Was? Mike asked, carefully maneuvering over the log behind Jeff.
Jeff paused and looked at Mike. The sea witch turned him, the queen, and everyone in the palace to stone, he stated.
Stone, Mike repeated.
Aaron shivered in his arms. Everyone except the king. His heart and soul are frozen. Nothing can touch him. Not even the sea witch, she whispered.
Frozen? All righty, I think I've definitely landed in an alternate reality, Mike muttered.
We'll stay the night here. Charlie, Mr. Tree may not appreciate you watering him, Marina warned when the pup started sniffing the base of the tree.
Aaron giggled again, while Jeff snickered. Mike could totally understand Charlie's confused look. Marina had stopped in front of a tree that was twice as big as the others.
His arms tightened around Aaron when she suddenly began to shiver uncontrollably. His skepticism must have shown on his face. Marina gave him a small smile before she reached forward and touched the trunk of the tree. "Please, Mr. Tree, we need shelter for the night," she said.
Jeff's laugh warned Mike that his jaw was hanging open. He snapped it shut, but that didn't keep the awe from his expression. The tree trembled under Marina's touch, and the seam where the bark had healed opened to reveal a cavernous interior. Marina turned and motioned for them to go inside. Mike bowed his head and followed Jeff and Charlie through the narrow opening. Straightening, he was surprised to see the interior was aglow with tiny green lights. Jeff shrugged off the pack he was carrying and set it on the ground. Mike turned in a tight circle. His gaze skimmed the interior. There was no way he was going to place Aaron on the ground.
"I'll lay down a cover for Aaron," Jeff said, reaching inside his pack. "Let me have the fire sticks," Marina instructed.
Jeff looked up and scowled.
"A fire won't last long. As soon as night falls completely, the fire will go out," he said. "Yes, but at least it will give us some warmth," Marina retorted.
Mike looked up. The center of the tree was hollow all the way up. Near the top, he could see places where small amounts of light shone. Looking back at Jeff, he waited for the boy to spread a thin blanket across the ground. He gently lowered Aaron onto the blanket. Charlie immediately curled up next to the shivering little girl, Aaron's thin arm wrapped around the pup. Marina was pulling several short, fat sticks out of the bag. She stacked them in the center. Within seconds, they began to glow, and Mike could feel the heat. He was shocked when she adjusted one without it burning her. She looked up at that moment and caught his surprised expression. Once again, the hint of a smile lifted the corner of her mouth. She stood up and picked up her bow.
"This will give us some warmth. Unfortunately, it won't last long. The magic will dissipate as the darkness of night grows," she explained, with a hint of regret in her voice.
"Why don't you just build a regular fire?" Mike asked.
Marina briefly glanced at the opening before she turned back to him. He saw the regret and exhaustion in her eyes. His gaze moved to Jeff and Aaron. The boy was pulling several more blankets out of the backpack. Mike watched him kneel next to his younger sister and cover her with one of them. "It would take time to gather the wood. Even if we had wood, I have no flint with me," Marina said, walking over to kneel next to her sister.
"This is my fault. I should have been more attentive when I packed," Jeff said in a gruff voice.
Marina reached out and touched her brother's arm. She shook her head. There was a fierce, almost hard expression on her face. "It was an accident. Accidents happen. Never blame yourself," she replied.
Mike could see the love for her brother on Marina's face. Whatever happened, it was obvious that the boy took the loss of the flint hard. In a situation like this, he could understand that sometimes a mistake or an accident could be the difference between life and death.
"I think I can handle this.
You take care of your sister. I'll be back in a little while, Mike said. Marina rose to her feet. Concern and a hint of panic swept across her face. She took a step closer to him, searching his face.
Where are you going? It will be dark soon. Magna's spell will weaken you. You will be left defenseless, she said, shaking her head.
You said that the spell drains magic, right? Mike asked, lifting his hand to touch a strand of the mahogany hair that had come loose. Confusion flickered through her eyes.
Yes, she answered.
Mike smiled. I don't think I'll have to worry about her spell slowing me down. Your sister should be kept warm. Charlie is good, but even he can only do so much. Why don't you make her comfortable while I go get some firewood? He suggested.
But...
Mike tenderly cupped Marina's jaw and gently laid his thumb across her lips. Bending forward, he paused a breath away from her lips. He wanted nothing more than to press his lips against hers and erase the look of fear in her eyes. I have my own magic, remember? He reminded her. Her head moved up and down in agreement. With a sigh of regret, Mike pulled away. He allowed his fingers the luxury of sliding along her jaw before he turned and disappeared through the opening, back out into the forest. Twilight had descended, and new sounds began to awaken.
Remember your Boy Scout training, Mike, he said to himself, as he began searching the ground for suitable firewood.
Chapter 7
Marina,
Jeff said, pulling her out of the trance. Marina turned to look at her brother.
Yes?
She asked.
Do you think he might be the one Isha said Mother talked about?
Jeff asked.
I don't know, but I hope so, she said,
turning back to her brother.
Can you see if we have any food left in the bag? I'll place the healing stones around Aaron.
We have a little. I can make soup. That will make it stretch enough for all of us and be good for Aaron, Jeff said.
Marina nodded, kneeling by her sister again.
Hurry, before the fire sticks go out, she said.
Neither spoke as they worked. Jeff worked on making soup from the dried ingredients they had, and she focused on placing the healing stones on Aaron. She had to reassure Charlie that she wasn't hurting her sister. The pup kept a keen eye on her as she worked. Marina paused as she placed the last stone on the center of her sister's forehead. She could feel the heat radiating from Aaron's skin before she even touched her. The feeling of helplessness rose up in her throat. What if the stones didn't work? What if Aaron...
I'm going to go help Mike,
Marina said, placing the last stone on Aaron before rising to her feet.
Darkness has come,
Jeff warned, looking up at her in surprise. Marina bent over and started to pick up her bow, but decided to leave it. The bow wouldn't do her much good now. She swallowed back the bitterness threatening to choke her. Ignoring her fatigue, Marina focused on keeping herself upright. Otherwise, she would find herself back on the blanket beside Aaron.
I know. Try to finish the soup, she instructed.
Be careful,
Jeff called after her. Marina gripped the bark of the tree and gave a sharp nod before continuing out into the darkness. She stumbled when the full weight of Magna's spell hit her. A shiver ran through her body, and she almost turned back. Instead, she gritted her teeth and pressed on. The fire sticks would burn for a short time longer than normal due to the protection of the tree, but even the tree could not protect them from the spell. She stopped several feet outside of the tree and closed her eyes. Without her sense of sight, her hearing became sharper. She focused on each different sound. Tilting her head to the side, she turned to the left. The faint sound of rustling and the silence of the insects in that direction told her that someone or something was there. Marina bit back a giggle when she heard a smothered curse. Opening her eyes, she headed in Mike's direction. He was only a few hundred feet from the large tree that was giving them shelter. In one arm, he held several long, thin branches. In his other arm, he had several decent-sized pieces of wood.
"Let me help you,"
Marina offered, stepping out of the shadows.
"Shit!"
Mike exclaimed, dropping the bundles in his arms and reaching inside his jacket. He shook his head at her.
You need to call out a warning next time.
I think half of the forest knows where you are, she chuckled.
You have strange plants here.
There was one that glows when you touch it, he commented. The night stars. They help light the forest. They're beautiful when they release their seeds once a year. The entire forest lights up, Marina explained.
She bent and picked up some of the dead limbs he had dropped. It wasn't until she straightened that the wave of fatigue hit her like a tsunami, pulling the strength from her. Her lips parted on a cry of frustration when she felt the world begin to spin.
Hey, steady there, Mike said, wrapping his arm around her waist.
It's Magna's spell. I hate feeling so weak, Marina softly groaned.
Why did you come out if you knew the spell would affect you like this? Mike demanded, holding her close.
Marina leaned her head forward, resting her forehead against Mike's chest. She hadn't realized how tall or how broad he was. He also smelled incredibly good, warm, with a hint of the rainforest. A frown creased her brow as another feeling swept through her. She felt stronger, as if her magic flowed through her again. Lifting her head, she gazed up at him with a puzzled frown. Her eyes searched his face. She couldn't see the aura of his magic, but he must have some to make her feel like this.
What kind of magic do you have that can work against the power of the Sea Witch? Marina asked, with a faintly incredulous voice.
Mike's arm tightened around her and he chuckled.
The good old Holbrook kind, he teased, before his expression sobered, and he lifted a hand to brush it against her cheek. Will you be okay?
Marina nodded.
The nights are difficult, but with the first rays of the sun the spell lifts. We should get back to Aaron and Jeff, she said.
She reluctantly pulled away from him. Almost immediately she could feel a weight settle around her as Magna's spell drained her magic once again. Mike's arms fell away, and he studied her for several seconds before he bent over and picked up a stack of branches. He handed them to her when she held her arms out. He finished picking up the larger pieces and straightened. Marina turned back toward the tree. She was confused by her reaction to Mike. When she touched him, she felt strong again. But there was something else. She also felt flustered. Her body reacted to him in a strange way. Just now, she had actually wanted to press her lips to his. The urge had never been so strong before. If that wasn't bad enough, she felt warm and tingly all over. For a moment, she wondered if she was coming down with the same sickness as the children. Ducking her head, she stepped through the narrow opening in the tree. Jeff looked up in relief. She could see that the fire sticks were barely glowing. The small pot of soup had thin spirals of steam rising from it. Marina's gaze moved to Aaron, who was quietly lying with Charlie asleep by her side. Her sister's eyelids fluttered open.
"Are the healing stones helping?"
Marina asked, placing the pile of branches down on the ground.
"They helped a little, but their magic faded with the sun. I am so cold,"
Aaron responded, in a barely audible voice.
"Here," Mike said, setting down the limbs he'd been carrying next to the ones Marina had deposited.
Marina turned and watched as Mike shrugged off his jacket. He stepped forward and laid it over Aaron. The stone she had placed on Aaron's forehead slid off when her sister turned her head. Mike leaned down and picked up the stone. Marina gasped when she saw the sudden, powerful glow as he gently placed it back on Aaron's forehead. Aaron must have felt the sudden influx of healing power because her body bowed upward. Mike's hand jerked back, and he straightened. Almost immediately, the glow faded, and Aaron sank back against the blanket with a soft moan.
"Mike, touch the stone again,"
Marina said, stepping up to the blanket before sinking down next to her sister.
"What? What happened?"
he asked, confused.
"I'm not sure. Please, touch the stone again," Marina begged.
She could see the hesitation on his face before he knelt down on one knee beside Aaron. He reached out and gently touched the healing stone. Once again, it glowed with the magic held inside. Erin's eyes opened, and she stared up at Mike with wide eyes filled with awe.
No. Move your fingers until you're touching Erin, Marina ordered.
He glanced at her before turning his gaze down to Erin's face. Sliding his fingers off the stone, he cupped the little girl's face with his large hand. Marina's lips parted when she saw the colorful aura of Erin's magic